Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
A lot to cover. First of all, Fred, we're nearing a minor milestone on our YouTube channel.
That's right. We're at almost one-third of a million.
Wow.
On the YouTube channel.
One-third of a million views. And with the audience's help, we should meet that milestone by the next show, by next Friday.
By the next show, we're almost there, almost at one-third of a million.
Of a million views.
That's incredible.
And if we have time at the end of the show, we could list some of our science videos, our science playlist.
Some really cool videos out there, for
sure. And if you go, well
done too.
RSR.org, click on our YouTube channel, and I think you'd just love some of these videos.
Oh, some great animations. I'm looking forward to talking about them, Bob.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And then the big event this week in theaters, a Fathom event, there was a movie, Genesis Paradise Lost. Fred, such an amazing film. And it was sold out in a number of theaters around the country, even here in Denver. We were out west at the Golden Theater, United Artists Colorado Mills. We got to set up Real Science Radio tables inside the theater at the 3D showing and the standard showing. And fun film. Afterward, we invited people on the radio. You remember that?
Yeah. Went to the Yard House.
Yeah, let's go to the Yard House restaurant.
Pretty good turnout.
Yeah, we had 20 people. Great photo from a waiter took the photo of our table. We had such a good conversation for maybe an hour and a half. And Fred, one of the things I loved the most about the film was the day three animation of the plants being pulled out of the ground. And that model, creationists are beginning to adopt that model that, of course, God could have created a 60-foot tree in a blink of an eye. There it is. It appears. Or he could have had it grown out of the ground supernaturally rapidly. And it's fun to think of God doing it that way.
Yeah, the pulling out effect.
Yes.
Seems like I heard that from someone in the past.
Yeah, right? We've been talking about this for, I don't know, 15 years or so on the air.
At least.
Fred, then that becomes a model for day four and God stretching out the heavens and pulling the light out of the stars, where he actually pulled the light from the distance he put the stars away all the way to the earth and even beyond.
Yeah, it's really neat parallelism.
Yes.
It's awesome they're showing that.
Yeah, really fun. So what a great film that was. Oh, and also, Fred, of all the creation films produced to date, this one had the most extraordinary animation, probably 20, 25 minutes worth of photorealism, 3D animation, really awesome. So what a tremendous job Eric Hovind did. He's been on the show recently. We talked about the film. So just a fun event for the creation movement this very week.
Yep. And then next we're going to talk about new evidence for the Exodus. You know, some of my favorite shows this last year, really just mind-blowing, because there's a lot of new stuff on the Exodus.
Yes.
Because for years they said, there's no evidence for the Exodus.
Right.
And now it's so overwhelming. We've got some great shows on those.
Yes.
And we're going to add to that list something that
Another item. Real interesting.
A fun little item. Yep.
And then there's a personal note from my family. My son Dominic, he's the youngest of our seven sons, and he noticed a couple errors in his science curriculum, so it'd be fun to point those out. And then, Fred, you and I want to do another list show. And this one, maybe people in the audience could send in their ideas for this program.
Yeah, and it's Evolution's Big Squeeze.
The Big
Squeeze. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
Oh,
it would be great to get some people to email in.
Yeah.
Or mail in or phone in ideas that we could add to this list. And
like,
then we'll do a list show on it.
Yeah, like the fossils they find, they say, well, this species got pushed back 100 million years. This got pushed back 200 million years. This got pushed back 9 million years.
Yeah, they find these different things and it throws their paradigm on its head.
Right, the big squeeze, and then evolution happens so slowly we can't see it. yet so fast that millions of mutations propagate in a few million years. So, yeah, the big squeeze. So those are fun topics for today's program. So I think we start with the brand new item in our list of evidence for the Exodus. This one is fun because there's a whole category of examples that if the Exodus were not historically true, then there's all kinds of things that are floating in history that have no foundation.
Yeah, like the word Pharaoh talked about in our Exodus shows.
Yeah, for the king of Egypt, that's a Hebrew word. It's not an Egyptian word. And the Jews, the Hebrews at the time, they gave the word Pharaoh not only to the world, but even to the Egyptians.
That's right.
That's a fun one.
It is.
It'd be like ISIS. It'd be like if we began calling our government a caliphate. We're not likely to do that. We're not going to adopt the vocabulary of our geopolitical opponent. We're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And the Egyptians grew to hate the Hebrews, but they had such an impact on their culture, they called their king Pharaoh.
Pharaoh, and that word, again, originated in Hebrew. It's Hebrew. Not an Egyptian word.
Right. It's the Hebrew word for the palace of the king of Egypt. Then there's the word Goshen, where the Hebrews lived. That appears to be a Hebrew word that was then adopted by the Egyptians.
What about the Ten Commandments?
Oh, it's the single greatest legal influence in the history of the world.
That's probably got to be the biggest one here, right?
Yeah, right. And if the Exodus is not historical, the Ten Commandments have no historical basis, no foundation. But they just appeared in some
guy's writings. Yeah, where'd that story come from?
Right. And then, Fred, how about the word alphabet? Where does the word alphabet come from?
Aleph, Bet.
The first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And Egyptologists and archaeologists have found so many inscription stones that have writing on them that just this year, 2017, a major scholarly publication has translated all those stones and said this was Hebrew, so that Hebrew is the very first phonetic alphabet in the history of the world. All this coming from the Exodus. It's just so thrilling. And now there's another one we just added.
We just added to the list. This next one's really cool. So the Hebrews also gave us the really popular medical symbol.
Yeah.
The most, serpent on the pole, right?
Yeah. This is the most popular symbol in the world for the healing arts. And it's this snake on a staff. Fred, where in the world does that come from, that image? And it turns out that it comes from the Bible.
The Bible. Bob, what does the secular world say about that symbol?
They don't say it comes from the Bible.
Yeah, they say it came from the time of Hippocrates.
Oh, the Hippocratic Oath and all that.
Exactly.
They really do, don't they?
Yep.
But he was way later than
a
Moses.
A lot later than Moses.
Right.
Way later by about 1,000 years.
Yeah, right.
And you remember the Book of Numbers, right?
Oh, yeah. Moses wrote that book. Yeah,
he did write this book. So Moses wrote what God told him, which is, make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole. And it shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live.
Wow.
So Moses made a bronze serpent and put it on a pole, and so it was. If a serpent had bitten anyone, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived.
So you look at the serpent on the staff, on the pole, and then you get healed.
Yeah.
So it became a symbol for the healing arts.
And, you know, God loves symbolism a lot. Yeah. And I'm kind of curious about this one, Bob. Why would he choose a serpent on a pole?
Yeah.
What's the symbolism there?
Yeah, great question. You know, the curse began at the tree. And Jesus, the Bible says explicitly in the New Testament, Jesus became a curse on the tree. So that Jesus came to undo the curse that began at the tree. But the curse that began at the tree began with the serpent tempting Eve. And so Jesus, it said explicitly in the New Testament that Jesus became a curse. He became a curse. It says that Jesus became sin for us. He took our sin upon himself. So the curse that begins with the serpent on the tree, Jesus becomes that curse on the tree. So that serpent becomes a symbol. Just like, Fred, the word sin and the word sin offering in Hebrew, they're the same word. Because the sin offering become sin, so to speak. Jesus was the sin offering, the perfect, sinless, eternal God, the sacrifice for us, yet he became sin. So the Hebrew word, let's say for the sin offering on the Day of Atonement, that Hebrew word for sin offering is the same word as for sin. It's the same.
Wow.
Because Jesus became sin for us. And so the serpent with the tree beginning the curse, and Jesus becomes sin. He became a curse on the tree. I believe that's why that symbolism is there.
That is such a great explanation. I bet you're a pastor, maybe of a church,
Denver Bible Church. That's right. You know, Sunday mornings we have sermons, but sometimes a Bible study breaks out. It's like you go to
that's my favorite kind of sermon, actually.
Yeah, isn't that great? It's like you go to a fight and a hockey game breaks out. At Denver Bible Church, I'd say once every 6 weeks, the sermon ends up being just a full-blown Bible study.
Yeah, and Bob, you've got a great audio and video of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
When I first
listened to that on the audio version, I was like, this doesn't sound right.
That is because about the tree that we're talking about.
About the very tree.
The tree, the curse, all that.
And the whole story behind the tree. And I'm like, that's not in Genesis. Yeah. And then when I actually listened more, you gave the verses of where it is. It's not in Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
The description of it. It's somewhere else in the Bible.
It's so astounding,
isn't it? It's really cool. Yeah. I highly recommend that. Audio or video.
One of the most fun Bible studies we've done in the last 27 years.
Yeah.
We've been on the air.
I'm not surprised you say that, because I'd say that was my favorite when I listened to your Bible studies.
It's so cool.
It's incredible.
So back to this medical symbol of the serpent and the staff. American Right to Life, Fred, you're familiar with those guys. They're the Bible-based anti-abortion group, the abolitionist group, the personhood group. And they have an article, it's on their homepage, about the Hippocratic Oath, the serpent, and the staff. It is so interesting. In fact, we should link to it in today's show summary on our website.
AmericanRightToLife.org, right?
Yes. And so at RSR.org also we'll link to it. And it talks about the time frames where Moses predates Hippocrates by more than 1,000 years, like you said. But what if the time frames were reversed? What if Hippocrates came 1,000 years before Moses?
Well, of course, the secular people would insist that the Bible copied it.
Of course, they would, right? But because Moses came 1,000 years before Hippocrates, they say, oh, it has no relationship whatsoever. They both happen to come up with a serpent on a pole. That's just too much. And the fact that that's a symbol around the world, I just love all of that. In all the things that are known around the world that would have no historical foundation if the Exodus were not true. The Ten Commandments, the word Pharaoh, the alphabet, that leaders have to obey the law. Even that is in the books of Moses. That doesn't go back to the pagan Greeks. That is from the Exodus account by Moses. And so then this medical symbol, really, really fun. If the atheists rip away the history of the Exodus, so many major features of the world's culture are then inexplicable.
And you know what else I think is really fun? This little short story you've been working on. Did you complete that?
Oh, Fred, it's almost done. I've got all 10 done. Just the conclusion now. It's almost done.
If the 10 plagues hit America.
Yes.
That'll be real interesting.
That's a fun short story. If 10 plagues hit America, I've wanted to have it done for Christmas. Perhaps if people order from our store, rsr.org, click on the store, science products for their family or friends for Christmas, maybe they could ask for this and we could give it as a bonus. That's what I'd like to do.
Well, if they order more stuff, you could maybe buy some energy drinks and get this thing done.
Yeah, it's so close. And it's so fun. If 10 plagues hit America, so we update it to the modern culture. And to the New Testament teachings as compared to the Old Testament. So it's really, really compelling, really fun. And it's a short story.
Do you have an Ipawar in there?
Ipawar,
you need to, yeah, you need to add that character.
There's no Ipawar in there. In fact, there's not even a Moses. The 10 plagues, the plagues are the protagonist. The plagues themselves have to tell the story.
And if the listening audience wants to know about Ipawer, go listen to our Exodus series. Oh. He was an eyewitness to the whole thing.
Oh,
it's amazing how the secularists try to explain how, oh, he's not really talking about the Exodus.
No, he just
it
made
matches
it, all
it perfectly.
Up. And 40 times he says that the wealth went to the slaves. The wealth.
Yeah, how many times has that happened in history?
Right.
One time.
And without a battle, without a fight.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
Just that all the wealth went to the servants. In the whole thing, he only blamed one person. Remember who he blamed? He said, the river turned to blood, and it was he who poured the water on the ground.
Yes.
And that's right out of the Bible. Man. It's Moses.
Yep.
Isn't that awesome from ancient
Egypt? It really
Egypt?
Is. That's why I was saying that's one of my favorite shows in the last couple years because of all the new information that came out.
Yes. RSR's list of evidence.
And then that incredible video on the Exodus, too, is just really fantastic.
Patterns of evidence. In fact, we just ordered another 30 copies of that DVD for our inventory. Great thing to get somebody for Christmas.
RSR.org, right? Go to the store.
Oh, RSR.org. Click on the store. Get Patterns of Evidence.
My wife is not that big into documentaries, but she was floored by that thing.
Oh.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's just
awesome.
Fabulous. Tell Sandy hi, by the way.
I will.
Okay. So, Fred, I mentioned a personal note from our youngest son, Dominic. Remember, I don't know, a year ago, we said Michael, dual enrollment, high school and college, Red Rocks. I think it was his astronomy teacher who said that, well, we can now explain functional complexity.
Yeah.
We could explain that completely because of Darwinism.
He dueled with him in his dual enrollment.
Yeah, that's right. Do you remember the argument Michael made against the teacher?
Oh, it was so cool. Really great. Teacher, what about the water cycle?
Yeah, right? The hydrologic cycle, it is so wildly complex. It's totally functional. It's necessary for all that biological life. Without it, everything be dead. And here we have Darwinism that couldn't even begin to explain the functional complexity of the hydrologic cycle because it's dealing with a different discipline.
Now, in heaven, do you think we'll get to watch videos of, like, when that happened? I would love to have been there when Michael asked that question.
Oh, yeah.
Just to see his expression, you know, the teacher's expression.
Yeah. Well, just so awesome. And another student said, oh, yeah, and how about the atmosphere? Isn't that functionally complex?
That's great. It's like Richard Dawkins when they asked him in that video, can you give one example of the increase of information at the genetic level?
From a mutation.
And he sat there with just a blank look on his face.
It was the most
awkward. And then he got mad. They didn't show this on the video. He's like, cut, cut, cut.
It was the most awkward pregnant pause. Only it wasn't pregnant because there was no birth afterward. It was just a disaster.
Yeah.
And, hey, he should have been humble enough to say, you know what? My theory doesn't explain the increase in information.
And if evolution is true, he should have been able to riddle off millions, literally. I mean, he should be able to do what we do on the show is, you know, constantly shoot apples in a barrel.
Yeah, it's like discovery after discovery is a crisis for the evolutionists. They always have to rewrite human history, rewrite cosmology, go back to the drawing board. And now they've been trained to say this sheds new light on human history. They've been told to use that phrase. Any discovery that contradicts their fundamental assumptions, predictions, they're told to say, this sheds new light on evolution.
Yeah. But that's right after they say things like, this is horrendous.
Right. This is jaw-droppingly shocking. So, okay, now our son Dominic, he's now 16 years old. So he tells me he's reading and he finds in his science textbooks, and he finds this statement, Fred, that if it weren't for volcanoes, our atmosphere wouldn't be very breathable.
If it weren't for volcanoes. A destructive
and
thing.
What
like
do you
volcanoes.
Think about that statement? And then we'll share what Dominic said about it.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is the end of Genesis chapter 1, and all things were very good.
Does that
include volcanoes?
No, it doesn't. There were no volcanoes.
So my worldview right away would say.
Until the flood, there were no volcanoes.
Yeah. How would that then make the atmosphere better?
Yeah, there were no natural catastrophes before. So something like a volcano, sure, to have effects, and it could have positive and negative effects, but you don't need volcanoes. But the Earth did not need natural disasters to have a breathable atmosphere.
That's correct.
And what Dominic got a kick out of it was he said, Dad, the Bible doesn't mention volcanoes. It mentions so much in the natural world, and it has so many scientific statements that are astounding, like God hung the earth on nothing. For example, the water cycle.
Yeah.
Just amazing teachings in the Bible.
Bound the Pleiades, loose the belt of Orion.
Oh.
Things you wouldn't know without a telescope like the Hubble.
Just awesome, right. So he said, even though the Bible doesn't mention volcanoes, we could identify when a statement about them is true or false based on our biblical worldview. From knowing the Bible, we could better understand science and whether something is true or false. I really appreciated that.
I do too. I think that's really cool. And, you know, it's awesome having this worldview. We know it's true. I mean, doing the show is great because, like we talked about earlier, constantly shooting apples in a barrel. It's so easy.
And it's so
and
fun.
It is fun.
Did I ever tell you what Walt Brown calls us, you and me, Dr. Walt Brown?
You did.
Our favorite scientist.
It last time.
He calls us Click and Clack, the car guys. From National Public Radio, NPR, the car show. It's been on the air for 30 years. I think they're retiring. The funniest, funniest show about how to fix cars. But you and I, it's like how to fix your worldview. And real nice for Dr. Walt Brown to even compare us to Click and Clack. You know, the car guys, the brothers who do that
show.
It's
an honor.
Yeah, it really is. But something else. Dominic found another error, he said.
That's right. And this we've talked about this one before. We talked a lot about it after the Ken Ham debate, remember?
Yes, that's right. In Dominic's biology textbook, second edition by Dr. Jay Weil, he's a friend of Real Science Radio. He's been on the show. He's an amazing science textbook author. But Dominic said there's something in here that is a mistake. And it said this, that science cannot prove anything. And Dominic argued that that's false. And you know what? We've talked about this, Fred, but what I've realized when people say that science cannot prove anything, what they tend to mean is science can't prove everything. That's what they tend to mean without thinking about it. Because if science can't prove that, let's say, the moon is not as hot as the sun, if it can't prove that, then we cannot know anything. We can't know that when we open up a book, that the text on the pages is the same day after day. We can't know that.
Yeah.
And that means we can't know God's word. If you can't trust the reasoning faculties that God gave us and to use them in a logical method, which is what science is, then you can't even trust opening a book and reading the text.
Yeah. And so, you know, the humanist, you know, they're into relativism. And Bob, I don't know if I ever had this thought before that this ever occurred to me. But when I first got into the evolution debate, there was a guy where I worked and he said evolution was a proven fact. So we kind of, I'm like, well, that doesn't sound right, but I still believe some of evolution. I definitely believed in millions of years.
Wow.
But one of the things that just popped into my mind, he told me that also along with evolution being a fact, that science cannot prove anything.
Yeah.
In a way, it contradicted himself, but I remember at that time.
It's a human materialist secular concept.
It is. I did not believe that, and I argued with him on that second part about how you can't prove anything. Well, I'm like, that's goofy.
Well, then what they say immediately after that, they say proof is only possible in mathematics. So then I say, well, prove mathematics exists. How are they going to do that? How are you going to prove mathematics exists with mathematics? You can't do that. So it turns out to be false. And there's an article on it, and you and I did a fun show on it about forensics.
Yeah.
The science of the past.
It's a show we did right after the Ken Ham Bill Nye debate.
Yes. rsr.org/forensics. Folks will love that. Fred, I've been hearing from some of the leading creation scientists around the world, and they say this has been a major claim of the creation movement for decades, especially that historical science is not real science. This article of ours takes that head on, and they've been saying, you know what? This is making a lot of sense. we as a movement, we need to rethink that claim.
Yeah, that's really good that that's been happening. Again, rsr.org/forensics.
Yes. So that's Dominic. And then, Fred, you mentioned Evolution's Big Squeeze. We're planning on doing another list show, like our list of problems with solar system formation, our list of not so old things, our list of evidence against the Big Bang, all those shows. And so this would be a really fun one on Evolution's Big Squeeze.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we gave some examples earlier, but there's so many fun ones, you know, jellyfish fossils that are in rocks that they date that are 200 million years earlier than they expected. So, you know, they say, well, you know, what's that saying that they're starting to use now?
Oh, this sheds new light on evolution. Yeah. Yeah. Cephalopod fossils, which are like squid, cuttlefish, 35 million years before they were able to propagate. They got fossil pollen pushing back plant evolution by 100 million years. Plants and their sophisticated genetics pushed back by 200 million years. Fred, you mentioned that textbook you had to read on assignment last week on prokaryotic development about the life cycle of bacteria and all, blue-green algae. And they said the bacteria has been the same. You go back 2 billion years, you go back 3.5 billion years, and the dates are not real, but they're just layers in the sediments of the earth. And they're saying the bacteria in those layers look pretty much exactly like the bacteria alive today.
Yeah. How's the out of Africa model doing?
Oh, brother. Oh, that's for Evolution's Big Squeeze. Fred, this is a great one. Fred, because you know how evolutionists, historians, archaeologists, anthropologists, they say that human beings came out of Africa. Well, every discovery they're making, they're saying they have to rewrite human history. They found two teeth from an ape, allegedly 9.7 million years old in Northern Europe. They said, we got to rewrite human history.
So they found two teeth.
Two teeth. And there goes the whole theory.
So if they only found one, they'd find that'd be a tooth.
Yeah, that's right.
They found two teeth.
Two teeth. They found human footprints on the island of Crete. They said they're 5.7 million years old.
Oh.
Guess what? You got to rewrite human history. They found a very human skull dated at 325,000 years old, way older than, say, Neanderthal. Well,
that's easily explainable. A guy went in a time machine.
Guess what? They got to rewrite human history.
H.G. Wells. So that skull is H.G. Wells, I bet.
We got a sharp producer, I got to say.
We do.
Yeah, must be in the time machine. The ancient Egyptian mummy DNA study got rewrite human history. Everything is rewriting human history.
It sheds new light on it.
Evolution. The whale evolution. Yeah, it sheds new light. The whale evolution story. They said it had 10 million years to evolve back into the sea. Now, the fossils they have found, they say it's squeezed to just 1 million years. So
10 million was already ridiculous. I mean, 100 zillion years is ridiculous. But
so absurd. So, Fred, evolution's big squeeze. Here are examples. Evolution happens so slowly we can't see it, yet so fast that millions of mutations propagate in a few million
to
years.
Drive evolution.
It's got to go like wildfire. Or how about this, Fred? Small populations are in danger of extinction, yet they need small populations for the mutation to become
take
common.
Hold. Yeah.
To take hold. Yeah.
Yeah.
But small populations tend to go extinct. And if you have a large population, it's impossible for a mutation to become standard. Take 100 million years for one, and they need millions of mutations.
And it makes you say really silly things. Like, remember Stephen Jay Gould, his punctuated equilibrium?
Oh, yeah.
So a prediction of his theory, a prediction was that you wouldn't find gradualism in the fossil record.
Yeah,
because
right.
It happened so fast, you wouldn't be able to see it.
Right.
So his evidence for his theory, his
is
prediction,
that, no
that you won't find any evidence.
Right, exactly.
I'm not kidding.
No,
I'm not making that stuff up.
They used to joke about that.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And then to evolve flight, you'd get bad legs long before you'd get good wings. All that, the evolution squeeze. So
we got people can email in their ideas, phone or whatever.
Yes.
We'll add them to this list.
Yeah. Email,
and then do a list show.
Email is best, bob@rsr.org. So then, Fred, this minor milestone that we're about to hit, 1/3 of a million views on our YouTube channel.
That really is impressive.
Isn't that cool? That'll be so fun. You know, we should have been working on our YouTube channel for 20 years, but we were foolish. I was foolish. I had a TV show, for crying out loud, and we don't focus on a YouTube
channel.
Well,
that's a tube, a TV tube.
Yeah, that's right.
CRT tube.
So at any rate, better late than never. We started a couple years ago working on our YouTube channel, and we are so close now to 250,000 views. If people here, maybe we can mention a few of our videos, and if folks will click on over, rsr.org, click to our YouTube channel. It's right there on the top of every page on our website, and watch some of these videos. By next week, Lord willing, we could be at 250,000 views, 333,333 views.
That would be awesome. We're really close.
Yes.
Or just go to YouTube, and I bet you can find it if you search on RSR.
RSR, Real Science Radio. Bob Enyart. Try Fred Williams.
Yep.
Really fun. So the first video we have up there is our Global Flood and Hydroplate Theory excerpts. That's at 22,700 views. That's a fun video. It's about 40 minutes long. We've got a video on the negative effects of marijuana by Real Science Radio.
Recommend that one.
Yeah, that's got a couple thousand views. Richard Dawkins. This is a real short one, 2 minutes. Atheists want nothing to be something. It's the funniest video.
Yeah, that
video.
Is funny.
Yeah. How about, remember the one at Pepperdine University, Fred, Trading Genesis? That's got now a couple thousand views. That's where the secular theories of origins don't exist. They say God doesn't exist. What actually doesn't exist is their own theories of origins. And we go through one by one and we show that they don't even have theories.
And that's when you were out at Pepperdine.
Yes. Speaking on the campus. What a great time. And Fred, one of my favorite shows of all time with you was The Caterpillar Kills Atheism.
I always remember that as like one of the first shows, if not the first show.
Yeah. Wasn't that a great one? And that's now a YouTube video. So that's becoming popular. We did a video on the fountains of magma of the Great Deep.
Of the Great Deep,
because
yeah.
Some creationists are saying the fountains of the Great Deep were not water, they were magma.
Yep.
And that's just so bad.
It is.
And we explain why in that video. Then we have Dawkins on eye evolution, and we compare that absurdity of the simple-minded, foolish things he says with the serious science on our eye evolution page. RSR.org.
Or look at this, and then over 4,000 views on the Earth's original 360-day year calendar.
Isn't that cool?
That is.
That topic is popular around the world, the original 360-day year. That is so fun. And then a video, Real Dinosaur Soft Tissue, Biological Soft Tissue, even on ABC 60 Minutes. That was cool. Another one, Richard Dawkins Proves a Creationist Right, 5,000 views. That's from the old Bob and Your Life TV show. So there's so many videos.
Lots of good stuff there.
Yeah, you can enjoy and help us by next week. You don't have to watch 1,000 videos, right? Nobody has to do that.
Just 900.
No, yeah. But one video, two videos, enjoy yourself. And if enough people do that, we'll hit 250,000 by next week.
I bet we hit it.
Thank you so much, Fred.
Thanks, Bob. This was fun.
So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent Design.